Accession number 8905, roll number 1.
Commander Clark, Reel 1. Could you tell me what you were doing when the Japanese launched their attack in December 1941?
Their general attack on Malaya?
Yes, their general attack in the Far East.
I was serving in HMS Repulse as a young lieutenant commander.
And what were your duties aboard ship?
My action station duty was officer in charge of one of the 15-inch gun turrets. But I took a rotational duty as principal control officer when we were cruising or when we were not at action stations. And I was actually a principal control officer when, at the time, we went to action stations.
Can you recollect which particular 15-inch gun it was?
Yes, a turret.
Where was that located?
Right on the forecastle, as far forward as the most forward turret.
Did the Japanese attack take you by surprise, personally?
No, I think we were expecting them over some time. We were very exposed position out on the coast there, and we knew we'd been sighted, so we knew we should be attacked.
But did the actual launching of the Far East War by the Japanese take you by surprise?
No, I don't think so. We were all expecting it, and we wouldn't have been out there except for the Japanese menace. The ship wouldn't have been out there except for that.
What, before you actually came into contact with the Japanese, what were your own personal estimates of the calibre of the Japanese as a fighting force?
Well, very high. I always had a very high opinion of the Japs as fighters from what I'd read about them in history. And certainly I had no reason to modify it from experience.
Was that opinion of yours shared by your brother officers and by the men on board?
Yes, I think so.
So you never came across the opinion that the Japanese might be a pushover?
Oh, no. They had the whole of their navy out there, and we could only send, well, you would almost describe as a token force. No, by no means a pushover.
Can you tell me what happened to you aboard the Repulse after the Japanese launched their attack?
Their attack on the ship?
No, their general attack in the Far East.
Well, Repulse got there shortly before they launched their attack, and we were actually on the way down to Australia. When we were ordered by the Admiralty to return to Singapore, and we were there when the Japanese actually attacked.
Did you witness any air raid on Singapore?
I don't recollect witnessing any air raid at that time. No, not till towards the end of the campaign.
Now, can you recollect what happened when the Repulse actually sailed north to intercept the Japanese landings in northern Malaya?
Yes, well, in a general way, I can remember that we sailed the two battle cruisers and accompanying destroyers, two destroyers. We had no aircraft cover because the aircraft carrier that was supposed to have been out there got stuck, as you know, in the Panama Canal. And the RAF had already warned Admiral Phillips that they couldn't provide air cover, so it was taking a pretty good risk. But he considered that the risk was justified in order to try and stop the Japanese landings up north. So we sailed.
Can you tell me what your first sight of the Japanese was, personally?
Well, the squadron was sighted by, I think it was a Japanese flying boat, as we were on our way up to intercept the convoy. And when it was obvious to the admiral that we had been sighted and would therefore be reported and were within easy range of their air attacks, he then realized, I think, that it was an impossible situation and it was no good going on. Of course, there are better people than I qualified to talk about this side of things. But on the way back, there was a report of a landing at another spot further south, Kwantan, which we went in to investigate. And it was while we were doing that that the Japanese Air Force found us and started their attacks.
What was your actual first sight of the Japanese Air Force?
My first sight was from the bridge when I was at the time principal control officer. And we saw the high-altitude bombers coming over. Well, of course, we went to action stations. Now, my action station was in a 15-inch turret, which would be no use at all. So I stayed on the bridge as a sort of extra and turned over to the gunnery officer, who took over the anti-aircraft whole gunnery situation then. And that was my first sight of the Japs, with these high-altitude bombers coming over. And I can remember very distinct, I suppose the time when one felt most nervous was when one saw the bombs actually coming down, and they appeared to be coming down straight for us. I can remember that quite distinctly, and straddled us, one hit us. That was the first attack. I think there were two high-level bombing attacks. Only one bomb hit, went through the upper deck, was stopped at the armor deck.
And what were your duties whilst this was actually going on?
I had none. I was relieved by the gunnery officer, so I just stayed on the bridge, partly of interest and partly to be of any help I could be to the captain. So I was standing by the captain while all this was going on.
Could you see any casualties from these bombs?
No. Only what was reported on telephones and things.
Was there any panic on board when the bombs hit?
No, none at all. Lots of guns firing. So ACAC gunnery was not very effective in those days, as you probably know.
So how did the crew behave?
Oh, absolutely marvellously. But that was followed by the... Do you want me to continue?
Yes, please.
That was followed by the torpedo bomber attacks. And the jet planes came in at us, flying low. Then they drop their torpedoes, then come up and perhaps pass us or try and avoid us as they passed us, and get a pretty good battering from our guns. But the captain was very skillful at handling ship, and he managed to comb the torpedoes so that they passed down either side of us, and none of them hit us on the first attack. What I think amazed me about that was that the gunnery wasn't at all bad, and we could see the ACAC hitting these planes, or some of them. And I can remember one plane that got just blown to pieces, But there was a shower of Ekek going through past these Jap torpedo bombers, but it made no difference to them. They came on, and one couldn't help thinking what magnificent gallant fellows they were. I've never flown in a plane in an attack, so I don't know. Maybe it didn't seem so bad when you're in the plane as it does when you're actually firing at them. But they weren't deterred in the slightest bit by the shell that was being fired at them. They came on, some of them quite close, and then they'd fly quite close to the ship, and again they'd get the short-range ekek plastering them the whole time, and one or two came down, others went on, but there was no sign of any fear at all, no hesitation. They came just straight on. If one hadn't realised it before, one would have realised then one was up against something pretty tough, much more so, I would say, than for instance, the fighting against the Italians.
Did the torpedo attack seem any more fearsome than the high-level attack to you?
Oh, they were much more dangerous. Very, very much more dangerous, I think. Then they, when the Japs saw what avoiding action we had taken, after a pause, they came in and attacked us from two different directions. Well, now, you can, in turning to comb one lot of torpedoes, of course, you expose your side to another lot coming down. You can't do both. You can comb one or the other, you can try dodging, but one or other is going to get you. And they knew that. They were clever enough to know that. And that was the attack which got us, and we got, I don't know, something like four torpedoes hit us on the port side.
Can you describe in detail what happened next?
Well, from my point of view on the bridge, one felt the thumps of the torpedo hit you, and of course they made whacking great holes in the side, which the ship couldn't take, so gradually she started to heel over to port, and slowed down, of course, because things like boilers were blown up and so on. Captain did his best to avoid it, but it was no good. And I stayed where I was on the bridge as she went over on her side. And eventually down we went. I went down in a lot of froth and bubbles, same with the captain and anyone else who was on the bridge. And I think I came up to surface, and then I was sucked down again, and I came up again. And I found myself fairly close to a Kali raft. And I swam to that and sat on that until we were picked up by a destroyer. Where I was lucky in a way, was that the ship did go over on its side. It didn't go down plump like that, upright. But the bridge is very close to one of the funnels. And if she'd gone down like that, the indraft in the funnel, as she went under, of course, would have sucked all the bridge personnel down into the funnel. As she went over on her side, it's like turning a cup over on its side. There's not a great indraft. The water gradually goes in. And so we weren't affected by that.
Did the people on the bridge not attempt to abandon ship? Did they just stand on
the
bridge?
Oh, no. The captain was... the captain kept everybody at action station as long as he possibly could. I wouldn't be absolutely certain about this, but I would say the ship was practically on her side before the last gun stopped firing. And at a very late stage, he gave permission to abandon ship.
Did that do much good, the continuing firing until the last minute?
Well, I mean, you hope it will. I mean, that's what you're there for. Try and bring them down.
Now,
I mean, it didn't do any good to save the ship, of course, but I mean, you try and destroy as much of the enemy as you can.
Could we break off the narrative of what happened to you personally at this stage, with going back to a slightly earlier stage with what was happening to the Prince of Wales? Did you see much of that?
Prince of Wales had got... she was taking her own avoiding action, and she got separated from us by 2 or 3 miles, I should think, as it appeared to be, by the time we sank. All I can recollect seeing of her was she was making a tremendous amount of smoke. But I can't, I have no recollection of anything else. She was too far away.
What did people, what did you and your brother officers think of the performance of the Prince of Wales in the battle?
At the time, of course, we wouldn't think anything. I mean, we wouldn't know. We wouldn't know what was happening at all. Afterwards, when one knew the story and talked to survivors and so on, one realised that her equipment had not stood up to what was expected of her.
Which equipment in particular?
Well, I think you can read that in books, but the... she was only fairly recently built and commissioned, as you know, and she hadn't had proper trials. And things jammed, which shouldn't have jammed, and so on. And she, I suppose she was as well protected as one hoped, and the torpedo got her in very vulnerable spots, like the near the propellers. She had bad luck, I think, as well as... not properly tested equipment.
Now, can you describe what happened to you in the sea?
In what?
Once you went into the sea?
After being picked... after getting on the Carlo raft?
Yes.
Yes, we were picked up by one of the destroyers, and Repulse went down, of course, and there were hundreds of survivors afloat, and there was a lot of oil on the water too, which didn't help. And we spent our time trying to pick up survivors.
After you got on the destroyer, you mean?
Yes.
How long were you on the Carly raft?
Not very long. I shouldn't think more than not more than 10 minutes, probably.
And about how many people would have been on it?
Perhaps up to a dozen. I really can't remember now.
Were they all officers?
Oh no, it'd be a complete mix-up.
What condition were they in?
Wet. I don't recollect any actual wounded being on board. It would have been mostly people from the upper deck gun positions and bridge personnel. There's no real reason why they should have been wounded. I don't recollect any being wounded.
Had any of them swallowed oil?
On that particular raft, no. I think we were... I don't think we were near the oil. Not near enough to have done that. We got on the raft too quick.
Had you had to swim to the raft? Far?
Yes, not very far, no, only a few yards.
Was there much suction as the Repulse went down?
No. That was because, as I say, she went down on her side. When she finally went down, I can't recollect, funnily enough, when she finally disappeared. I was probably too busy either being picked up or picking up survivors or something like that. But I can't recollect her actually disappearing. I think she gradually filled up and then went down.
Did there seem to be many non-swimmers in distress in the water?
I think the only ones who were in real difficulty, and of course a lot of whom didn't survive, were those who were in the oil.
Which particular destroyer picked you up?
The Electra picked me up.
And how were you treated on board?
I think we were treated very well. She took an enormous number back to Singapore. Oh, they would have treated us very well. But again, my memories are not very good as to actually what happened on the way back to Singapore.
Did you see casualties from the repulse on board the Electra? Any wounded?
I have no recollection of that. They would have been taken down below and dealt with by the doctor.
Was the Electra absolutely crowded, or was there still room?
Oh yes, she was. She was pretty well packed. I don't know how many were on board, but she stayed there, as far as I remember, until we reckoned there was really nothing more we could do to pick up, and then returned to Singapore.
Did you go direct to Singapore yourself with the
rest?
Yes,
in Electra, yes.
And what happened to you there?
Well, we were farmed out to various people to be dealt with and provided with clothing. I went to the Admiral's house, actually, when the Admiral's wife, I can remember, looked after my lot. Can't remember really what happened. We were wrung out and dried and given some clothing of some sort.
Had you managed to rescue anything from the repulse in the way of personal belongings?
No, not a thing. I lost everything.
Were you given anything to make up for it?
I think at the end of the war, I was able to I was able to claim things like new uniform and what you might call official things, but not for a lot of personal treasures, of which I had quite a lot on board, rather foolishly actually, but I liked to surround myself with certain things that are perhaps an inspiration, and they were all lost.
But were you given anything at all in Singapore?
Yes, we were given the necessary clothing. Well, I was appointed to for a few days to combined headquarters. It was really Army RAF, but I was sent as a naval air liaison officer, and given, as far as I remember, it was a khaki uniform of sorts. What else I was given, I don't know, but it was khaki. And I was only there a short time before I started up with this army officer in the Argyles. I started up a commando business, commandership.
How was that put to you?
Well, it was a private initiative. We had maps on the wall showing, with pins stuck in, showing the position of the army and the enemy coming down the peninsula, and I remember this army officer and I were looking at this in a gloomy sort of way and reflecting that everything was on the defensive and nothing being done of an offensive nature. And we talked it over together and decided that something ought to be done in the way of commandos. He went to General Percival, who was Commander-in-Chief. I went to Admiral Spooner, and he managed to get I think it was a platoon, or it may have been a couple of platoons of troops. And Admiral Spooner gave me absolutely carte blanche. He was very keen and very helpful. He gave me carte blanche to collect any craft of any sort I could get, including a ship and lots of small motor craft, as top priority to get this commando show going. It was a young officer's dream, really.
Who was the Argyle's officer who approached you about it?
A Major Rose, Angus Rose.
Why was it such a dream?
Well, for a young officer to be given carte blanche by an admiral and say, OK, this is your idea, now you tell me what you want, you shall have it. You are to be given absolutely top priority. You can have what you want in the way of officers and boats. Tell me when you're ready, and you carry on and operate as you want to. He knew that the business was to try and pop in troops behind the Jap lines as they came down south. And, you couldn't dream of a more exciting and unexpected turn of events, really.
What kind of force did you manage to assemble?
I had this ship. I had a ship called the Kudat, with its captain and personnel under me. That was going to act as a base ship. I could take up the coast to Port Swettenham. And any number of small motorboats and motorcraft. Also had at least one, I think it was two, 100-foot motor launches, very lightly armed, and a couple of 72-foot motor launches, and then various much smaller boats, which I took up, first of all, to Port Swettenham. And I was given carte blanche over the choice of officers.
Who did you choose?
I chose what officers I wanted, officers I knew, and I was absolutely ready except for one officer who I couldn't get. And I went to the chief of staff, who was an RN captain, and said, can I have Lieutenant so-and-so, please? And he said, no, you can't. He's on such a job. So I said, well, the admiral says I'm to have top priority, and I need him. And his rather irritated reply was, oh, the admiral says that to everybody. So I thought to myself, all right, here goes. And I left his office and I went straight to the admiral and I said, I'm all right, sir, all ready to go, except for one officer. He said, who's that? So I said, Lieutenant so-and-so. He said, why are you waiting for him? So I said, because Captain Bell says I can't have him. And so the admiral said, did you tell Captain Bell that I'd said you were to have top priority? So I said, yes, sir. And Captain Bell said, oh, the admiral says that to everybody. So we were sitting, the admiral was sitting at his desk, and he rang the bell for his chauffeur. He grabbed his cap, put it on, said, come with me. And he left his office with me, got into his car, drove round the dockyard into Captain Bell's office in absolute rage. And there was Captain Bell with all his junior staff, writers and others, in the office. And I went in with him, and he tore that man absolutely to shreds. There was an admiral to a post captain, four-ring captain, and having told him what he thought about it, and that I, of course, that I was to have what I wanted, He then left the office, and I can tell you I practically hung on to his coattails going out of the office.
Did you meet Bell again afterwards?
Only in a distant way, because another joy of this operation was that the Admiral had said to me, when you're up the coast, if you want anything, get in touch with me. Don't bother about my staff.